Welcome to Spirit in Action. My name is Mark Helpsmeet, and each week we bring you visits and conversations with people doing healing work for this world, hearing what they're doing and what inspires them and supports them in doing it. Welcome to Spirit in Action. I'm so grateful that today for Spirit in Action, we're catching a glimpse of the organization Indivisible, and specifically Chippewa Valley Individual, the local chapter here in the place I happen to live. You can be sure there's a chapter near you because online I found that there are 28 chapters in Wisconsin and hundreds, maybe even thousands nationwide. Indivisible's vision is a real democracy of, by, and for the people. And they state that we have to build a democracy that reflects a broad, multiracial, we the people, one that works for all of us and is sustained by all of us. Only then will we be able to achieve a progressive vision for our future. We'll be visiting today with a group leader of the Chippewa Valley Indivisible Group, Cindy Greening. Cindy is new as an activist organizer, but she has come powerfully into that role, which bodes well locally, but also all around the country as leaders arise, called for the right work at the right time. I especially appreciate Cindy's gift of time to speak with me today because she's doing lots of work in preparation for Bernie Sanders' visit to this area tomorrow, where she will be speaking on stage with Bernie. Thanks to Andrew Jansen for production assistance today. Right now, Cindy Greening joins me via Zoom. Cindy, thanks so much for joining me for Spirit in Action.
Thanks for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's especially a great gift that you're taking this time, given that Bernie Sanders is arriving tomorrow. Talk about that event, what's coming in. Is he connected with Indivisible other than as an inspiration?
No. Bernie Sanders is running a rally. He's been touring ever since the election, and he's doing a rally about fighting oligarchy. It's pushing back the billionaire grasp on our future. And when he goes to an area, I guess he invites people in the area who are doing, you know, community-based work to come and speak ahead and say a little bit about their group and before he comes in, and then he comes in and, you know, inspires everyone to keep fighting.
Well, he's got so many decades of doing the fight. I understand you're part of the program tomorrow.
I am. They invited me to speak ahead. I have to hold it to 3 minutes. I had to submit a script to get it approved. Minor edits. And they told me just make sure it's under 3 minutes. So, yep, I have 3 minutes. And mostly I'm going to talk about, you know, our representatives who aren't listening to us.
Which the local chapter of Indivisible, the Chippewa Valley United, is the website I think you're using, ChippewaValleyUnited.com?
Yeah, we also have ChippewaValleyIndivisible.com. We just have to get the secure socket set on that. So in a week, it'll be Chippewa Valley Indivisible. Right now, it's United.
Indivisible got going locally some years ago. And it's been kind of resurrected or revivified or energized. You're part of that effort?
I am. The original Indivisible was formed in 2016 after the first Trump election by Leah and Ezra. So the first group that was made here in 2016 was called Indivisible Chippewa Valley Third District. And when I wanted to start something, and I wanted to have it up here in Chippewa, you know, just be housed here, I went and looked, and the other one still had the website, but no one had been on it for a couple years. And so I asked around and tried to find if they thought it was still active, and everyone said it wasn't really active anymore. So I named mine Chippewa Valley Indivisible, just flipped the words around because it's the same idea, because I wanted people from Eau Claire, people from Tilden, people from Cornell, wherever, to be able to come and be part of this. So I called it Chippewa Valley Indivisible. And then once I got going and people started coming, then people started hitting that old website. And so the people who ran that site reached out to me and said, hey, you want to just take over this group? So now I have that group as well, but we've just changed the name the other way.
So you're a computer programmer.
Well, I wouldn't say I'm a programmer, but I teach computer stuff. I taught for a number of years in Arizona, California, and then even here at UW Stout. And I taught primarily computer graphics media. I did teach web stuff. I taught web design, and I taught how to write apps and stuff.
Which makes you perfect for this job. A lot of people are media non-savvy, and so that makes the work that you're doing a lot tougher. So, why did you get into this work with Indivisible?
I moved back up here. My dad died and my mom became medically fragile. And so I came back to take care of her and be with her. And I came back in 2016, September. So I came right back right before the first Trump presidency. And at the time I would say politically aware. I wrote letters, I sent emails, I donated, I did all that kind of thing. But, I put signs in my front yard, which were constantly stolen, but, that's what I did. And then when this one came around, I was watching the Democratic convention and Michelle Obama gave her speech where she said, do something. And so the next day I walked into the Chippewa Dems office and I said, hi, my name is Cindy Greening. Michelle Obama sent me. And so they had a good chuckle. And so I was canvassing for them and doing things for them. But what I noticed is I wanted to be more nimble locally. Like I wanted, because if I would bring an idea to them, they would say, well, we have to run that by Madison. We're in the middle of an election now. It's really hard right now. And so I wanted the ability to be more nimble and respond to things. So then I looked to Indivisible. I also looked at Red Wine and Blue. I looked at Trouble Nation. I mean, I looked at a few things, and Indivisible seemed like the closest fit because it's grassroots and they had a lot of the infrastructure like that the Wisconsin Dem does. So they have canvassing, they have phone banking, they have a lot of the structure in place to help you. So I thought, I'm going to grab this one. And I made the group, but I didn't really do anything with it last while. I just stayed with Chippewa Dems because I was canvassing with them because I wanted to do whatever I could to help. But you know the result.
We know the result. And what I'm wondering is Indivisible simply another name for activist Democrats, or is it something broader?
No, it's considered progressive and not aligned with a party. The main thing we advocate is progressive values, and whichever candidate is for Indivisible. So we're not party aligned, although we tend to line up more closely with Dems most of the time, but not always. So we're not party affiliated. We're separate and distinct, and we're grassroots. And each organization, which I didn't know when I first got involved. Each Indivisible is like locally run and operated. You are like your own entity, and you pick and choose what are your issues, what's important to you. So, like some Indivisible groups are all about climate, some groups are all about immigration, some groups. So, the group just does whatever the group does. And so, you can have multiple Indivisible groups in an area.
So talk about the national group. It sounds like it's a bottom-up type group instead of a top-down.
Very much. Absolutely. And and when we go to meetings, it's not like they tell us what to do. They tell us what's working in other areas, what kind of things are happening. They open up for questions. Like some of the things they tell us that I think are like really good. They're like, don't run petition campaigns or sign them. Most of them are just to gather,
Contact information.
yeah, so they can market you later. So that was great. So, don't do the petition thing. And they were the ones that were encouraging us to have town halls. That they were really pushing on the first recess, set up town halls with your congresspeople. We've got another recess coming up March 15th to the 23rd. So we're going to be working those as well. So they started that. Although in the call yesterday, one of the things they said is, even when you're doing activist things, when something becomes successful, it becomes a drag. It no longer is fresh. It doesn't have energy. So even though the rally thing is working really well, we know this is going to have a certain shelf life, and we're going to have to prepare new actions. So we're always thinking of what can we do now to make people aware of what's going on.
Tell the folks who are listening to Spirit in Action, and again, this is going all across the country as well, what happened with our local representative when you tried to have a town hall with them?
Well, it wasn't a town hall. So we up here were not, like in Wisconsin, a lot of our stuff is around the Capitol and we're kind of much more rural. up here, so it's harder to get people to come up here. So they said if you couldn't have a town hall, meet with the staffers of your representatives. So initially we met with Tammy Baldwin's staffer because we figured that was an easy way to learn because I'm new to this. I mean, when Trump was inaugurated, we had 28 members. We have 403 right now.
No.
Yeah. So, and I'd like to, love to say I'm the brilliant one, but I just think it's because people are upset. So we didn't know what we were doing. So we did the Tammy Baldwin event first. And when we had the event, we had it at the library and the room holds 24 people. So we had 24 people there. And some folks came in and they were really, some folks gave real full-throated, like, we want you to defend us. We want you to fight for us. We are concerned with health care because so many hospitals have closed and all that kind of stuff, you know? So Anna Ringstad, Tammy's representative, took that back to her. And we actually, I felt like, I felt like Tammy heard us. I felt like there was more action. So then we tried Van Orden, Representative Derek Van Orden and Senator Ron Johnson. And we were getting not very far. But one of our members, Mary, she was able to connect with one of Van Orden's staffers. And initially, he said he would only meet with us one or two at a time, which I said, we can do that any day. We don't have to, whatever. And then they offered five. And then they said they would meet us in the library for the 24. We sent out a notice to our members for a sign up. And just on the Monday before, we were having it on a Thursday, and word got out in the community, and people started signing up like crazy. All of a sudden on Wednesday, I looked at the sign up. I was like, oh. So we called the office immediately. We called them right away. I mean, okay, so we called the library first to see if they had a bigger room, if they'd agreed to meet with the community. They didn't have a space, but they said they had one in a couple weeks. So we then called Representative Van Orden's office and said, hey, here's the deal. Word got out outside of the group, and people want to come. And we will hold to 24. We will only let 24 in the room for fire code. We'll hold to it, or we will surrender our time so that you can meet in 2 weeks with the community. And they said they would get back to us. And an hour later, we got a nasty gram with saying no, they were not going to have it at all.
Because people are too interested, I guess.
Yes, people are too interested. And so I sent out notices saying that he had canceled, and people kept responding. They were coming anyway. They just kept saying, they're coming anyway. They're coming anyway. And so we talked about it. Well, what are we going to do about this? Well, we can't leave the library hanging with all these angry people. And the library had told us when I called that they had heard about it. And they did tell us, yeah, we heard about that. We heard people are really wanting to come. We're getting a lot of people commenting that they want to see and talk to their representative. And so we decided that we would go and meet with the people and we would hear their concerns. Okay. And then one of Mary, the one who had talked to the staffer, had the brilliant idea. I can't lay claim to it at all. She said, why don't we have them write them down? And they can take them to the senator or to the representative's office. So as people were talking in the room, because we could only have 24, there were 138 total that came. So the library let the other folks be outside at the tables and stuff, and they were writing out their things. And then people were coming in and sharing. And when our hour was up for the time we had the library, I looked out and I saw a huge group of them were walking to the representative's office. It's 4.5 blocks from the library. And so they walked down to his office. And when they got there, the representative, the staffer came out and said that he could only meet with people individually because of privacy laws. I'm unfamiliar with
Yeah, right.
that. I'm unfamiliar with that law, but so the people who were there, and again, I'm just reporting because I wasn't there, but the people were there, and I know they're telling me, they said, okay, and they formed a line and said they'd wait. And the representative locked the door and never came to the door again.
And I recall seeing in the news some national Republican committee, a bigwig, saying that folks don't meet, don't go to town halls, don't shut them all down. Is that the word that you're hearing from on the national level?
Yes, absolutely. We're hearing that. Not only that, the next day in La Crosse, down, you know, which is a community about 2 hours south of here, the Representative Van Orden was supposed to meet with the Business Association, the North La Crosse Business Association, and WQOW reported that they changed the location and only told friendly voices and friendly constituents. Everyone else that registered was left standing outside an empty venue.
In other words, they're going to shut it down unless you bow to the folks and the principles that they want. You're not welcome to be heard. So it's not a democracy anymore, not representative.
We are not living in a representative democracy. In fact, Representative Van Orden tweeted, and I can send you the tweet, where he said that they were going to prosecute any of his constituents who didn't like his stand and were still trying to meet with him. They were going to consider it harassment and prosecute.
This is scary stuff. And I guess that's what energized you as well. I want to go back a little bit more information about you before we delve deeper into what Chippewa Valley Indivisible is going to be doing, is doing, what the objective is. But back to you. You're originally from around here. You've got relatives here. You've lived elsewhere. And have you been an activist? Have you been involved? What's your other activism looked like?
Well, you know, starting when I was in high school and college, I marched for peace and save the earth. I marched for Black Lives Matter. You know, I marched in the AIDS crisis and stuff like that. But I was never just a leader. I just showed up for stuff. Really, I just, you know, if there was a cause, I marched for the grape pickers. I marched for immigrants in Arizona. I would send money. I would write, but mostly I would just show up for things and, you know, post my social media stuff. But I was raising a kid and all that stuff. So, you know, I wasn't like an activist leader. And when I got up here, I can honestly say I didn't plan on it doing it up here either, but I just couldn't sit in the house anymore. It's just like, I've got to do something, you know, because people keep posting on social media, whatever that, you know, if you say, I wouldn't have let that happen when I was in Nazi Germany, I wouldn't have let that happen during the civil rights, whatever you're doing now is what you would do then. And I thought, well, I'm sitting in my living room complaining. I'm not doing anything. And so I had the Indivisible group. So I thought, well, I just need to start meeting it and see if there are enough people in this area that wanted help. And people came. They started coming. First it was 28, and then it was like, you know, and then it doubled. It was 48, and then it's 60. And like, you know, all of a sudden last week we had 150 people at the meeting. And the biggest thing that I would say that I see most clearly is that people want something to do. They don't want to have a meeting. They don't want to talk about it. So the main thing we come with every week is lists of things they can do. So it's write postcards for Susan Crawford, put up signs, go down to the Capitol and march there. We have a march in Eau Claire that we set up that's going to run every week. We are working on writing campaigns. So because some people want to work in the House, they don't want to be out. And some people like want to be out. So we try every week to come up with at least 10 things that people can do. That's our goal.
Creativity is a great thing. I think more than ever, I think that we're realizing that our representative democracy is not working. So just writing to your senator doesn't achieve much, right? You have to be doing something out in public. And if it's innovative, it's more likely to get some response. I was very pleased to see that the group showing up to Van Orden's office got the news, at least at one of the local television stations. I saw it in the other forms of news. And I remember back in 2006, there was a group of us, 100 of us, standing out on Hastings Way here. 3-year anniversary of victory in Iraq, right? Mm-hmm. And we're protesting war. We're part of standing for peace there. And the news station, which was only a block away from us, refused to cover it.
Mm-hmm.
So there has to be something different in order to get some attention to get things to change.
I think that's even true with our representatives. They can ignore us as long as nobody comes out. But when you've got people coming out like we have, like 138 people to the library, when you've got a couple hundred people on a corner, it's like they can't push us under the rug anymore and say like, oh, they're just, they're a bunch of hot. I mean, we were accused of being hired. We were accused of ambushing. We're, George Soros plants. We are self-funded. So far, the only person that's paid for anything is me. I have not even taken a penny. So it, I'm just saying, it's like we are just people who care, and our thing is that we care for our community. We want to help and protect our people because this is going to hurt all of us. And I think we have a linked fate. And if you hurt 10 people in our community, you really hurt all of us because they don't have jobs, their kids don't have things, crime. There's just so the consequences of hurting the community hurts all of us. And so we really push for, we're always looking for actions to strengthen our community.
I've even heard from the city council, from a friend of mine who's on city council, how the federal government is now reaching down to try and destroy their DEI, their diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts. They're trying to do that in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, as well as everywhere else around the country. So all of our listeners in other states they're experiencing the same thing locally. I have a feeling that there's some really good territory there that we could call local attention to. Now, part of the problem we have is the larger a city is, the more tilted it is towards Democrats or towards the blue and away from red. And
Toward non-progressive values.
yes. And the problems that are happening because of what's going on nationally are going to hit everyone. And in fact, I think it's going to hit red states even worse than it's going to hit blue states. So somehow there has to be an effort to be inclusive, to meet everybody's need, to care for all of the community, as you say. How is Indivisible reaching out that way, or is there a way?
No, we are. I was going to say that's a huge thrust we have. Thank heavens, I have really good members. We have wonderful people who think hard about what we can do, and we talk about, I mean, like one of the things I attend messaging calls every week to talk about how to talk to our friends, family, and neighbors and have them hear us. So I am going to messaging and researching, and then I'm sharing that in the group. And then I have people in the group who are like, we've got news deserts out in northern Wisconsin. So what we are going to do is we're going to have a letters to the editor campaign so that people who aren't tuning in to legacy media or mainstream media and aren't, paying attention, are only paying to attention to conservative media, but read the newspaper, will still start to see some other points of view. So we're going to have letter writing campaigns. We're going to have actions in these smaller towns. So we're working on it. I wouldn't say we have the answers, but we are working on how do we reach rural America.
Messaging is so important. Now, I was a speech communications major, amongst other things, and I've been politically active since I was young as well. So I've been very aware of this. One of the things that I think is predominantly true, not exclusively true, is that Republicans are good at following messaging and Democrats aren't. Progressives say, I've got to think for myself. And the conservatives are saying, we're a community. We're all saying the same thing. How do you approach that with a group like Indivisible? I'm sure there's diverse voices there too.
There are. And one of the things that I guess sometimes, oh, now you're going to start to learn about my philosophy. Sometimes I think we find the answer in, like, I don't have the answers. I'm new. And so we find the answer in community. So while we were doing the listening event, a lot, there were some people who were talking, a lot about Medicaid. There were some other folks talking about schools and how, and then there were folks talking about vulnerable groups, immigrants. And as people talked, one of the things I said to them is like, we all have a piece to take care of here. And I said, I don't know about all of you, but I can't do everything. And I don't think you can either. But if we each learn to take care of our piece with the same goal, we make the whole picture. And so that's what I see now. It's like, you can have a voice about the thing you love, but we're all marching in the same direction for the overarching goal. So I work always with like, share the piece that you love and talk about that and really hone in on that. And remember that we're all walking together for our freedom, democracy, and to make sure that our people are responsive. We are the people, we are the many. and together our voices can outweigh the money. We just have to hang together. And so it's like, it's learning how to have the individual voices take care of the piece that they care about most while we are all marching for the bigger goal together. What do you think?
I think that's it. I think it's, we need to do it. But it is hard when you're part of a culture, which is you do your thing, I'll do my thing. If we get together, fine. If not, that's cool too. When you've got that mindset, it doesn't build strength. And part of the strength of a lot of early economically changing, particularly for our country, was because we had unions that worked together. And unions were not predominantly white collar. They were blue collar folks for the most part, and they were strong and they worked together. And we have a much harder time doing that in our country now. I think with all the wonderful gifts that the 1960s brought to us, it also destroyed some level of working together in community. How do you transcend that?
I think the same thing. I think about this a lot. And it's about, I never has the message been more true. United we stand, divided we fall. And it's like, it's one of the reasons I keep languaging. We have a linked fate. Like we're all individuals and we all matter and we get hurt individually, but we, you know, we sink or swim together. And it's like, so you may be a farmer and I may have very different, you know, views from you on some things and very different needs. But if you get hurt, I get hurt. Like we need to be together. So I think it's, I think a huge part of the messaging, and I think Bernie is going to do that tomorrow, is part of it is like uniting us as a group against the, you know, the money, the oligarchy that is like, you know, and the reason they can do that, I'm sure you've seen the cartoon, you know, the man who has is sitting on 800 cookies and the other two people each have two cookies. And one of them, and they say, you know, he wants your cookies. He's going to take your cookies. And even Heather Cox Richardson had said that. She said in a group of 10 people, if the two people want something, if they can figure out someone else to turn them against, the other five or six will go after the two they've turned them against. And the two that want what they want will get what they want. And it's they've done study after study on it. And so it's the whole unity message that we need to keep. And I keep speaking it all the time. I always say, we are community. We are in this together. We've got to, you know, we are indivisible. You know, we are indivisible, you know.
Do you know about the origins of the national organization, Indivisible?
All I know is that the two main people, one of them was a policy wonk, and she married another fellow who worked for one of the folks there. And so they made a, you know, like right after Trump was elected, they wrote down and made a handbook for all the things that they saw that we could do and locally to start to fight back. And like they encourage every single group to get involved with local politics, get involved with state politics, because your voice carries here. Like we carry no weight in DC. You know, we're not in the Beltway. So we need to strengthen here so that we can carry that forward into the nation. I do think it's a unity message. I do.
I'm sure you've run into this, certainly by people who've come to the Indivisible meetings that you've been holding. I think there's a number of us who we'll look at the policies of anyone. Tammy Baldwin, the national senator from Wisconsin, she's not perfect. She's pretty darn good, but she's not perfect. And sometimes we use standards of perfection. Oh, this person voted wrong on this. This person does not vote on that issue the way that I want. Let's screw them. You know, just that kind of thing.
That's so good. That's one of the things I'm going to bring up in the meeting tomorrow. You're right on the money, because Simon Rosenberg, who's he does Hopium Chronicles, wonderful guy. Like there are some people I follow really close, and he's one who said that. He talked about how to talk to people. So he talked in his call two nights ago, he talked about messaging, but he also talked about we have to stop crucifying people who don't vote the way we like. Like what happens when, you know, some of these Republicans start breaking from Trump? Are you going to like castigate them and tear them apart when they're coming over? It's like, if we can't get them over, you know, it's like we all make mistakes. We got to forgive and move on, or understand that they thought they were doing the right thing at the right time. And we got to keep moving forward. So it's really interesting. I will admit that I used to be a person that was like, well, I don't like how they voted on X. You know, like I didn't like that Joe Biden stopped the questioning on Clarence Thomas. I mean, now that is going back in history. I didn't like that he stopped that. So when he was like, they were running, he got the nomination. I'm like, but we have Clarence Thomas because of him. I did vote for him. I did. But I had a big snafu inside about that. Those were those times, and I may not like that vote. If you're on my side now and I can trust you, I'm gonna let's go. You know what I mean?
I absolutely. What do you say to the people who say, I'm not going to vote for the lesser of two evils? I'm not going to vote for an evil at all because they did this policy, they did not vote the right way on Gaza, which is a big issue. I mean, it's many
Oh,
lives
the whole
suffered.
Gaza thing. Yeah, I have a friend in California that texts me a couple times a week about that. Anyway, but that's a whole different story. And how do I feel about that?
How do you respond to them?
It's like Ely, isn't it Elie Wiesel who said that not, that if you are not voicing an opinion, you are on the side of the oppressor. And so I use that a lot of like not voting means if something bad happens, you are responsible for that and you sided with that because you didn't stop it. So at least, vote for the thing that you will think will do the most good. Choose the best option you have.
There's a lot of concern right now that we have no political party in the United States that's viable that is really for people. We have the accusation is that the Democrats are corporatist and that the Republicans are in favor of the oligarchy. And that does seem how it's dividing up. So this lesser of two evils, corporatist is at least in terms of is interested in some kind of stability and general well-being. Oligarchy is for the well-being of a handful of people. Is that something you can talk about? Is that something you get accused about? Is it something that we need to look at?
I have to say, in the first Trump election, there were some of my friends who said that I'm going to vote third party because third party, I don't believe in any of them, which in Wisconsin gave us Trump. It really did. If you look at the numbers, if those people, that voted for Stein and the other folks, it hurt us really bad. And yet, I was on a call yesterday. It was that messaging call, and Senator Chris Murphy is on there, and he was talking a lot about how neither party is meeting the needs of the people, that everyone is being hurt, that the Democratic Party has become a bit of a vanguard as well, and that we need to get money out of politics, we need to, repeal Citizens United, and we need to go back to, if not Democrats being them, he's a Democrat, so he'll argue for the Democratic point of view, but I'm going to just argue for leadership point of view. And to me, the leadership point of view, he's like, we have to get back to the point where we are reforming what isn't working for everyday people. That is the party that we need to support, because that's what a representative democracy is. Heather Cox Richardson always says, we are the government. The government is what we call things we do. Like we elect people and then we choose to give money to seniors, to baby, to the vulnerable. We choose to protect our national interest. And it's like we have lost that since Citizens United. It has become controlled by money, whether it's a corporatist or whether it's a billionaire oligarch. They're both, neither are concerned enough with what is going on for everyday people. And so I'm ready for a new party to rise, but don't tell anyone that.
Folks, we're speaking with Cindy Greening. She's with Indivisible, the Chippewa Valley Indivisible website, chippewavalleyindivisible.org will be up by the time you hear this.
com.
Not org, it's dot com.
Well, I guess I should have put org, but I just didn't know any better. I can make it org too. I'll buy that one too.
I think it's a good idea.
Well, I can point them all into that spot.
Sure. We've got the link on northernspiritradio.org, along with links of all of our guests. The past 20 years, we've been doing Spirit in Action and Song of the Soul. Again, our website is northernspiritradio.org. We've tried to bring as many voices to you to help make this world a better place. We want to deal with the healing of the world. And that's what hopefully you're doing when you're supporting us and when you're supporting the Indivisible efforts across the country. Now, I'm right now connecting with Cindy Greening in the Chippewa Valley of Wisconsin. But if you go to indivisible.org, the national website, you can find your local unit and you can connect up with those folks. Certainly, there's many hundreds and probably thousands of people within arm's reach of you who want to be active and they need your help stepping forward together. As Cindy has been saying, it's what we do together that's going to have strength. And so we're going to work in that direction. Again, when you visit NordenspiritRadio.org and comment on this program, give us suggestions, give us feedback, give us your wisdom, because it's by your wisdom joining together with other people's wisdom that we're going to have any chance in this world against the oligarchs who are now attempting to take over. And I say attempting, but they're really a significant portion of the way there already. So please help us work together. Donations will help. We shouldn't make Cindy Greening pay everything out of her own pocket. Certainly, we help one another to free up people who are putting themselves particularly on the line. And I wanted to ask you, Cindy, what your title is. I mean, do you get to proclaim yourself as king of Indivisible? I don't think it works that way.
No, Grand Poobah. No, I'm kidding. I'm just called the group leader. That's all I'm called. I'm called the group leader. I have some leadership. I have a leadership team that works with me to, you know, that we bounce ideas and make sure, and we solicit feedback from people all the time. So, no, we're just a leader.
Emily pointed me to you. Clearly, she knew your name as the leader. I think there's other big grand poobahs who are part of this. You're not necessarily the person in public office who everybody would normally turn to and say, that's going to be our leader, because you didn't get 100,000 votes in the last election.
No, I did not. I didn't. I contemplated running for something, and then I decided I was too big of a wimp, that it always hurts my feelings when people say bad things. So I thought, oh, I couldn't do this. I just can't do politics because I get all crushed. I know. So I thought, well, I'll just kind of work in behind the scenes, because that I can do.
I have a feeling you've transcended that that weakness of I can't have people say bad things about me. I think they're doing it, aren't they?
They are. Man, they are. I'm getting it.
And what do you do with that now? How do people in Indivisible work forward against a lot of people who want to throw darts at them at the very least, if not bombs?
Yep, I know. The main thing that I do always is to try and do everything in integrity and with full honesty and complete direct action, so that I always at least know that no matter what they say, I have done the very best I can. And then I figure from there, I can't control what people say. They're going to say what they say. And it's hurtful, but I hope people who know me know that I wouldn't do that.
Back just shortly after we went into Afghanistan, I was part of an organization that just started up, a peace organization here in Eau Claire, and the radio station asked someone to come in and talk, and since I can talk just fine, I was the person. So I was on the TV here saying we should have considered other alternatives before going into Afghanistan. War should not be our first reaction by any means. My wife was at home the next day, got a phone call from someone asking for me. I wasn't here, so the person said, "Will you leave him a message? Tell him he should have gone up with the Twin Towers." Now, that kind of reaction, and when I had said something really very mild, we should have considered other alternatives, is really all I said. I'm imagining that you're going to get a lot bigger heat than that. Have you got it already?
You know, not huge yet. I assume it's coming. I assume. I mean, I all I've got, the blowback is, you know, the only blowback is saying that we were paid and that we ambushed them and that kind of stuff. So that's the main thing. And other than that, not yet. I would be really happy if it just passed me by. That would be perfect. I don't think it works that way.
Well, if you do get attacked and people say bad things about Cindy Greening, you can call me and I'll talk you down and I'll give you some reassurance of how wonderfully you're doing. So the desire is to reach out across the board. This is progressive issues that you're addressing. But are there people who would normally have been on the other side of the divide who have already been showing up for your meetings?
We do. We have people on the other side who are there. So, and they, we are surprised. And a lot of times it's family members bringing in family members who are making a change. It's not a huge amount yet. I would say maybe 15, 20%, maybe, I mean, at most. But we are having folks who either didn't vote or voted the other way who are now seeing and are afraid. That's the main thing we see. People are afraid of because of what happened with the farmers here. There was the freezing of the funds. There was a farmer up in Peshtigo who lost $30,000 of work they did last year that they won't get paid for. And I don't know about you, I can't afford to lose that kind of money. And there are other folks who had if things, that did repairs because they were supposed to get reimbursed. So there are people here who are feeling it. I mean, we have a woman in Eau Claire who had a business. She worked with USAID. They shut everything down. She's a single mom. She had been working on feeding babies. She was responsible for that kind of thing. And so what we're seeing is babies are dying. Our friend doesn't have a job, She's got a child. So it's like that's I, we're just trying to get people to understand. And that's why I think we're getting people coming in. And we are reaching, like across the board. Let's be honest, a lot of farmers voted Republican because the last time in the last Trump administration, they put tariffs on. And when it hurt the farmers, they paid them then. And so when it came time to vote for Trump this time, we all kept saying tariffs are, he's going to put on tariffs. And they're like, yeah, but he'll pay us anyway. And so they voted for Trump because they had an experience of that. But more and more of them are seeing that they may not be able to count on that this time. So we do have people coming in. I think there will be more. I mean, if these Medicaid cuts go through, every single person who's got a parent in a nursing home, you're going to move them into your house? I mean, seriously, what are you going to do? Most people, I know can't afford to hire in-home health care 24/7. If your parent and 40% of the people in the state of Wisconsin rely on Medicaid in nursing homes, so if 4 out of every 10 people in nursing homes get put back into homes, I gotta think you're gonna hear some squealing. I gotta think they're gonna be like, hey, we did not vote for this.
Have you heard from people who are probably voted for Donald Trump that they've been concerned about the Nazi direction of things? It's not only the salute that Elon Musk did, but it's more explicit talking about it and in fact connecting with countries and people who are specifically Nazi directed. Have you heard that from anybody in your meetings, or maybe that's just not the kind of thing to come up?
No, what I notice is a bigger upset. So the Nazi thing in the beginning when they were running and right when they first got in and Elon did it, right in the beginning, there was a lot of talk about Nazi and the Hitler and a lot of people were watching Netflix series. I was one of them, like The Collapse, how they did that. But more recently now, people are really concerned about national security. What's going on with Ukraine? And what's going on with the NATO things and all the other stuff, we are seeing far more chatter in the community about our national security. Like France, the things they're meeting without us. In France, they're saying we're being led by a traitor. What's going on with Canada and Mexico? We're seeing the national, our national standing be more impactful than the Nazi thing right now. I don't know.
Well, for very good reasons. I wanted to ask you a little bit about religion or spirituality, one of the great divides that happened, surprisingly to me, because I do not think that most of the people who are part of this movement are motivated by religion at all. They're motivated by self-interest and their physical riches, I think. One of the things that happened in the 1960s, the door was opened to not be religious, and the people who consider themselves none, they're not any religion or particular spiritual identity, that has grown tremendously over the last 20 years. What part does that have, pro or con, in the work of Indivisible?
I was raised Roman Catholic, but I have not been practicing any religion for a really long time. I would consider myself a spiritual and moral person. One of the things that we say in the group a lot is that we are caring people who care for others and that we want everyone to be okay. We have some faith-based, that's the term I use, some faith-based people who are very strongly motivated by their faith to do the work that they're doing with Indivisible. But faith itself and spirituality doesn't come up in the organization. It's more of a personal thing. Although, I mean, some of the people work almost exclusively in faith-based groups. Almost, you know, like that's their focus. And part of what they're doing in Indivisible is to meet that need of helping and caring. And then we have a lot of other folks who are not. I know, I will say that for a lot of people, faith is a really big hot button because of the, you know, white nationalist, you know, religious drive on the other side, that I think there are people who are, that are spirit-based and faithful people that feel uneasy bringing it up. I mean, that's one of the biggest things I've seen is that it's a real hot button for a lot of folks.
I've heard messages about what's happening with Indivisible brought up by a couple of the different people who are part of the Quaker meeting, which is where I've been involved for a long time. And so in our case, it's easy to be there because our spirituality is wide enough to welcome a whole lot of people across the board and speak respectfully to them. So anyway, I do hope that that's a bridge that can be spanned as well by the group, because I think we need the people with deep devotion and faith involved in this work.
One of our strongest members who I respect a great deal is an Episcopal priest who helps with messaging, again, how to speak to people and communicate in ways that are giving and forgiving. So it's just not part of it. It's present, but not part of it.
Since Indivisible is going beyond the usual letter writing type campaign, are there any particular exciting creative actions that are coming up that you can think of? Or maybe it's not been nailed down yet, and maybe you shouldn't say it over the air if it was.
Here's what I'm going to say. Bring me back in a couple of weeks and you'll be surprised.
I look forward to being surprised.
Yeah, we are brainstorming creative ideas now, and we have three or four of them that are out there, but they're not ready for prime time, as we say. And there will be more coming in. So check with us in a couple of weeks.
I think we can do that. I think you have to get to some other calls with Bernie Sanders arriving tomorrow. I know your schedule's more than full, and that's in addition to familial duties as well. You're making this world a wonderful place in so many ways, and I'm so grateful to meet you, Cindy. I've not met you before, and I'm glad that this work called you out of seclusion into the public limelight.
I want you to know that I knew nothing about you before you reached out to me last week, and I am delighted that we met, and I look forward to knowing you better.
And folks, again, we're speaking to Cindy Greening. She is, what's the term?
Group leader. Oh, Grand Poobah if you're on the Flintstones.
Okay. Grand Poobah or group leader for the local chapter of Indivisible, the Chippewa Valley Indivisible. Their website's on northernspiritradio.org, so you can connect with them and with the national group. Again, the 35 stations or so around the country who carry this program for you to connect with Indivisible and figure out how you can pull it together where you are. Just go to indivisible.org or ChippewaValleyIndivisible.org or com or both right here. And we're going to go out with a song. You suggested it. Tell folks about it, Cindy.
It's Patti Smith, People Have the Power. She wrote it when she was young, like in college. She's a wonderful activist. And for her whole life, it's never been more accurate. She's changed a couple of lines in the song that I think are terrific. And a couple of years ago, she got together on the East Coast and sang with a group of folks. So I hope you will post the link to it so they can see everyone singing People Have the Power. And the last thing they say is, use your voice.
Thank you for using your voice, Cindy. And folks, we go out with Patti Smith, People Have the Power. Thanks so much, Cindy, and may the force be with you.
And you.
We'll see you next week for Spirit in Action, folks. Here's Patti Smith.
dreaming. Well, of an aspect bright and fair. And my sleeping, it was broken. But my dream, it lingered near. In the farm of shining valleys, where the pure air rarefied. And my senses, a newly opened, I will waken into the cry. That the people have the power to redeem the work of fools upon the meek.
The theme music for this program is Turning of the World, performed by Sarah Thompson. Check out all things Spirit in Action on northernspiritradio.org. Guests, links, stations, and a place for your feedback, suggestions, and support. Thanks for listening. I'm Mark Helpsmeet, and I hope you find deep roots to support you to grow steadily toward the light. This is Spirit in Action.
with every song, we will move this world along, and our lives will feel the echo.